This is a Defocus Media production. What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Well, hey, everybody. We are back with the new live edition. I'm Dr. Jen Lyerly. And back in December, I was reading the review of optometry for that month and came across some great articles about some of the newer multifocal IOLs. And part of that conversation, they shared a stat that was really shocking to me, that only 7% of all cataract surgeries in the United States actually have patients opt for multifocal IOLs. And the rest are doing standard monofocal IOLs. I have had several patients that have had tremendous success with multifocal IOLs, and I think it's a missed opportunity. And I'm bringing on a guest, another optometrist, Dr. Kimberly Tice. She's going to join us tonight because she's actually had experience with some of the really new multifocal IOLs out there. So we want to kind of talk through what our patients are experiencing and how we're co-managing it in their post-op recovery time.
Yes, thank you so much for having me tonight, Jen. I appreciate it and excited about this topic. I think it's something that's kind of overlooked a little bit, especially with the statistic that you were talking about.
Well, Dr. Tice, I want to give people an opportunity to know you, so share a little bit about yourself and your practice.
Yes, I'm Dr. Kimberly Tice. I'm an optometrist in Columbus, Ohio. Private practice, treat lots of dry eye, a lot of disease, cataract co-management, LASIK co-management. So just a private practice, seeing what all of you guys see all day long as well.
How, you know, when you were going out there and getting the relationships with your cataract surgeons, one of the things that we talked about was some surgeons have really embraced this and some surgeons are not eager to get on board. So how did you find these surgeons that you feel like best serve your patients in your community?
Yeah, luckily in Columbus, Ohio, we have lots of cataract surgeons, and I have developed a couple of close relationships with two of them in particular that I just really trust, and we have just a very mutual respect for one another, and we really both embrace technology. So, you know, we work well together, we talk on the phone well about patients. So just kind of seeking out that relationship, I think, is really important. And I have several that I choose from, but there's definitely two that always stick out that I just trust that my patients will get excellent care from them and that we're on the same page.
Well, obviously, one of the where the initial patient conversation starts, they're in our chair, we're diagnosing them with cataracts that need surgery. So we're usually in this conversation, the first contact point that kind of sets the case up for, all right, you're going to have these options. How do you go about presenting multifocal IOLs to your patient before they even go to see the cataract surgeon?
You know, especially if it's a patient that I have a relationship with, you know, the first thing I'm thinking about is what is their personality, you know, maybe how picky they are about their glasses or just some things that I might already know about them if it's somebody I have an established relationship with. And then I just kind of have the conversation that there's a lot of options that we can do with the cataract surgery and the implant that we're going to choose. And I try to gauge how much they would love to be rid of their glasses, whether it's most of the time, just sometime, or do they love their glasses? And then I also try to kind of find out, again, more what they do and how this could affect them in their life. You know, people are really busy and active, and even if they're retired, they don't always love wearing glasses. So kind of reaching that information out of them, I think, is so important. And then once I kind of develop when do they want to be glasses free, then I can kind of think over the options that we have and present to them what might be the best and kind of go over the pros and cons with each one of those.
You know, we had mentioned you've had several patients that have decided to do this. And just looking at trends in your office, I know from my experience, it has seemed to be some of my younger patients that have had cataracts that are especially interested in this, people in their 60s, early 70s. What have you seen in your experience on who might gravitate towards wanting to do this?
Yeah, I agree with you, Jen. definitely my late 40s, early 50s, you know, when I tell them they have a cataract first, they're very surprised. And then they're kind of excited once I start talking about what the options that we have for them. So they have definitely embraced. So I would say definitely my 50-year-olds. I mean, my percentage is pretty high, actually, on then those 50, early 60-year-olds. We're probably at about 50, 60% on a premium IOL.
Wow.
But I've actually had a lot of mid-70 patients, if I think that they would be a good candidate for it, also really embrace this technology. I probably haven't had anybody over 74, 75. I think at that point, they're okay with wearing glasses. They're so used to it. They just maybe don't have the desire that the younger patients do.
I think we even see like almost like a generational split within that baby boomer generation where it's like 72 or three and younger. I mean, some of my patients that are 65 are coming in and they're like, I want to get LASIK. Like, give me a referral. And I'm like, oh, well, let's, you know, like we could do cataracts. That would be better. Like LASIK is like, why do you LASIK and get cataract surgery in 2 years? Yeah. So it's just amazing how many of those patients in their mid to late 60s are seeking your help for refractive surgery options. And then this is an excellent choice.
Yeah. Or they've had friends that have had it and talk about it. So I've had a lot of that actually recently, even just yesterday, actually. She didn't even have cataracts, but her friend had cataract surgery and she was all excited and she couldn't wait to have one of these implants as well. So, you know, word of mouth is really getting out amongst this group of patients.
Are there certain hobbies or activities that a patient has where you're like, oh, I don't think it's going to be like a great option?
I mean, sometimes, especially the nighttime driving. There's still some limitations with the nighttime driving. And, you know, so maybe if they're a truck driver or they drive every weekend to their lake house and, you know, that's what they always talk about, then sometimes I might be a little hesitant. Or if they do lots and lots of near work, they love to sew, crochet. You know, I always explain to them that these multifocals are going to be wonderful, but they'll probably still need some kind of reading glasses for the really fine up close type of things.
Yeah. I think, like you said, and the same conversation that we oftentimes will have with our multifocal IOLs, right? Like, if 80% of the time you are independent from glasses and to thread a needle, you need to throw on some readers, that is a major success story, right? We wouldn't consider that a failure in the multifocal contact lens either.
Yeah, no. And patients understand that, you know, usually I kind of go about it. If we can give you some great distance vision, intermediate vision, you can still see your iPad, you can go to the grocery store and be able to see that shelf. They're more than satisfied with that. You know, they don't mind putting on some reading glasses, like you said, for the fine print.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've read is some people might have concerns about some of these sports, like hunting, for example, where there's like a specific sight or shooting that they need to get. And that's usually not where the multifocal is going to be set up for. Golfing, for example, sometimes with that distance down to the golf club is a little bit out of focus. The same kind of concerns we'd have with prescribing progressives, right? But what I've actually found is if they're Tiger Woods, like they wouldn't be happy with these optics, but casual golfers, they do get like quite a good range of vision where I haven't found it to be a concern.
I would agree with you. You know, these new extended depth of focus lenses, the Symphony, I've had lots of patients have the Symphony lens and their distance vision is pretty amazing. And even their contrast is very, very good. So I don't hesitate actually with golfers too much at all. I think it would be a great lens for golf. And then they don't need prescription sunglasses or multiple pairs. It just really gives them some freedom that they really love and enjoy.
Well, we actually have some comments coming in from our friend, Dr. Darryl Glover. He got his second vaccine today, guys. So he's in bed with a fever, but joining in remotely. And he's got a question for us. He says, how often are you guys still recommending monovision?
If they've been successful in monovision with their contact lenses for years and years and years, so they understand the limitations and they're very satisfied with that, that's still a great option, I think, for that patient. But if they have never done monovision, I really think these other premium IOLs, the extended depth of focus, would be a much better option. They just regain so much of their binocular vision that I wouldn't jump into a mono focal monovision lens unless they've really experienced it.
I totally agree. I mean, if you're a current monovision contact lens wearer and you love it, no brainer. But I would never present that. Just like nowadays, like I'm not going to recommend for my first time contact lens wearer, like let's do monovision when I have multifocal options. We know that the binocularity is going to give them such better vision. And yes, people get used to monovision and many people do end up loving it. But the adaptation involved and the limitations involved with that long-term with depth perception, like it's never the most ideal choice, in my opinion.
No, I would say the only thing that sometimes my surgeons will do, if we do a symphony lens, maybe their non-dominant eye, give them like minus 50, minus 75, just a hint of some mono vision in that eye. They usually adapt very well, and that might give them a little bit more of that close range.
Let's talk a little bit about the lenses, because look, guys, the great thing about optometrists is that we don't have to be the experts on the lenses, right? The surgeon's really going to be that part. But I think having a good working understanding of what's happening with these lenses is going to help us understand what our patient's expectations should be and better educate about it in the room. So the Symphony is the lens that I have most experience with. That's what all of my patients have received that have gone with the multifocal IOL. And it is, like you mentioned, an extended depth of focus lens where you basically are getting like two focal point ranges distance and then around a plus 175 add. So it's considered to be good for distance, good for mid-range. For small print reading, you're probably going to need there's something on. And so many surgeons might supplement maybe doing a little bit of modified mono on the other eye if you're trying to get more of up close. Mm-hmm. I know, Dr. Tyson, you worked with some of the other lenses, the Panoptics and the brand new Vivity as well.
Yes. I actually have quite a bit of experience with the new Panoptics by Alcon. And that's been a great lens. It's a trifocal lens, so it actually has three different ranges of vision. And with my younger patients, my late 40s to 50s that have a pristine retina, a pristine macula, that has worked really well. They pull out their cell phone after both eyes are done and they're able to read their text messages. They're really ecstatic about that. A little bit more glare and halo at nighttime with that lens over the Symphony, because it really does have the diffractive rings. But as long as the patient understands that going in and they're not that bothered by nighttime driving or glare, that's a wonderful option. Again, kind of for the younger patients, I think, just because the macula and the retina definitely has to look really good and not much dry eye, or the cornea has to be also pristine.
What about the new Vivity? What's different about that one?
Yeah, so I've only had one or two patients with a Vivity. It's a brand new lens. It just came out this year. Still extended depth of focus, so similar to the Symphony, best distance and best intermediate vision. But it doesn't have any of those diffractive rings. So not much glare and halo. Okay. From what I've experienced with my couple of patients that have had it. It's definitely more forgiving. So if there are any kind of retinal issues, maybe a little bit of a membrane or just a little bit of some drusen, they still do very well with that lens.
Interesting. You know, this whole idea, and we're obviously we've had optics and like refraction, diffraction, all that. But I really, when people are talking to me about diffractive optics, it's kind of just like, but then I saw a diagram of what this looks like. Okay, if we think about our multifocal contact lenses and those rings that we're used to, but with diffraction, it's almost like the teeth of a saw.
Yes.
Where you've got these peaks and valleys at the ridges of those rings, and that's what's bending and moving the light. So when we think about that, that's why there could be that like soft halo or soft ring around things. But the advantage maybe of the Vivity is we're gonna get rid of those little soft tooth edges.
Yeah. I think it's more thicker in the middle and then it kind of slopes down. So it doesn't have, again, kind of like that stair step sawtooth that you were mentioning. So it's brand new. I've only had a couple patients with it, but it's very promising. I think that's going to be an excellent, excellent option for a lot of patients.
One of the other cool things that I was reading about is some surgeons that maybe feel more comfortable with a couple of different lens types, they might put a Symphony in one eye and again, like a modified monovision approach, a panoptics in the other. So one eye is a little bit better distance to near, and one eye is a little bit better, distance to intermediate. And then with the panoptics, you get a little bit more of that up close range at near. So there, you can actually combo these two, which is pretty cool.
Yes, I've only had maybe one or two patients that have had that. That's one of the things with these premium IOLs. I definitely see the patient back after the first eye, see how they're doing, see how happy they are before we do the second eye. So that's just something with the patient care that we wait a little bit longer, maybe between the two eyes, just to make sure they're adapting to the first one. Because then the game plan might change a little bit, exactly like you were talking about, and do kind of a mix and match.
Well, before we move into the co-management post-op piece of this, I'm going to take a few questions that we're getting coming in. So Eric-San, not all ophthalmologists are on board with multifocal IOLs. So how did you recruit the right surgeon?
Well, luckily, I've been working with a surgeon for all my years in Columbus. So I've been working with a surgeon for 12, 15 years, and he has a newer associate who came aboard to the practice. So he, you know, comes in, introduces himself, and he's young and energetic. And we just kind of fell into knowing him just from the other surgeon that's been practicing. So I kind of just fell into him. And then my other surgeon that I use a lot, actually at a continuing education meeting, so we go to the local events, and it was an ophthalmology group, and I thought she was a great speaker. So I just talked to her afterwards, just asked her some questions, and that just developed a great relationship and kind of a friendship too.
What I found in my experience is that the surgeons that tend to be embracing these are also the ones that are very eager to get in front of optometry groups, because they want to share what they're doing that's setting them apart. So you're probably going to be meeting them at your local CE events coming out to, virtually now, but they're going to be volunteering to speak at your, society meetings and things like that, because they understand to grow that part of what they're doing, they need the optometry referrals. So it actually, in most of your situations, I think they're going to be knocking down your door to get to you, and you won't have to work too hard to find them.
Yeah, that was exactly my situation pretty much as well. So yeah, I would agree with that. They need us to help them be successful with this.
And it's all about, because the right patients are usually those younger patients that haven't waited till they're 80 to get cataract surgery. So they're very motivated for practically. So they're going to be in our chair first. And we're going to know their personalities. We're going to know if they're sitting there, and you remake their glasses twice every single year, and they're one of those patients that are like, this eye is a little bit different than this eye, they're not a good candidate, So it's the same screening process that we would do on who we'd recommend contact lenses to.
Yeah, exactly. If you think I'm not going to put this person in a multifocal contact lens for some reason, we already have that information, and the surgeons appreciate that so much. Otherwise, they're meeting them for the first time, so they really go off of my recommendation.
Another question from Dr. Glover. He says, what about blue light protection? Is this a conversation that you have with your patients when it comes to their IOLs?
Great question, Dr. Glover. That's a topic that just comes up so much, and I'm not sure if actually I go over that very much with them. I'll be honest. I think all the new IOLs, have UV protection and everything. I don't think they have any kind of blue light protection. Mm-hmm. So I assume I'd have the same conversation I would with anybody else. If they want to wear that at the computer and the phone, sure.
Yeah. From my understanding of it, and please, if you guys are experts on these lenses and correct us if I'm wrong, but like you said, they all have built-in UV protection, but the idea of blue light protection or a yellow tint to the lenses has kind of really gone by the wayside, because there were some reports and concerns, especially with the yellow tint to lenses, that it was upsetting sleep-wake cycles, and potentially that would increase the risk of dementia if you were causing confusion to the brain. So it became kind of unpopular in ophthalmology circles, I don't know, like 5 to 6 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. And we've kind of seen companies, because of that, steer clear of adding the blue light in. But as something that you add on temporarily with glasses on and off, obviously you're not having that concern of like a permanent adjustment to someone's sleep-wake cycle.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it would probably really affect their contrast sensitivity too with that. So yeah, I don't think that'd be a good idea.
in all of these multifocal IOLs, you actually are losing a certain amount of light coming into the eye too because of that sawtooth edge diffraction. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think it's around 12 to 14% of light is lost with Symphony, with panoptics. So compared to a monofocal IOL, it actually is a little dimmer by roughly 12% as well. So you probably don't want to tint it on top of that.
Yes, agreed.
So let's talk about post-op management because, okay, you've prepped it. You think the person's a great candidate. They get the surgery done, and then 1 week later, they are in your chair, and they are ready to see, right? But sometimes they come in, and they're like, I'm having trouble seeing. So what are some of the things that you've noticed in your post-op, especially that 1 week post-op?
If they're complaining about halos or glare, which we've probably already had the discussion, they're going to have some of that. You know, I try to just say it's kind of like floaters. So before, when you first get a floater or you've really noticed them, you're, you know, really bothered by them, but then it kind of goes away. You kind of forget about them. You don't notice them anymore. So I kind of describe the halo and glare similar to that. And that seems to kind of calm them down a little bit. And then they're okay with that. You know, again, if we've already prepped them that the up close could need a little bit of work, you know, then we talk about glasses and when they could use those or some type of business lens for the computer and near. Other things, these patients come back pretty happy. I have to admit, like, there's not a lot of problems.
Well, you know, what my very first one was a couple of years back now, and he actually came back and he was like, I think I'm having a hard time seeing at distance. And you know, our normal post-op stuff, like check vision, he's like 20/30-ish. We AR him, he ARs like a -3 or some craziness, and I'm like, oh my goodness, like this is, I don't know if like there's a displaced. Something has happened. So I go in there and I'm like in the phoropter and he ends up taking like -1 or -2 to get to the 20/20 line. Then I do my normal thing where I'm like, okay, +++, tell me when it gets blurry. Like 50 clicks later. And then it's like, oh, blurry now. I'm like, okay, never mind. Some of these people, and you know, we don't really think of after cataract surgery, they're going to be able to accommodate. Some of these people really can move through that lens and they're not used to the optics. And so everything will come out looking like you've got a ton of minus. But if you plus all that out, it is not there. So I've kind of found not to trust maybe my AR quite as much on these type of patients. Yeah. And then also I always put a little plus in the front. I don't put it Plano in there. I definitely don't put in what the AR says. I maybe put in like a +75 before I start my refraction and then see what happens.
I think those are great tips. Yeah, I've kind of seen that too. I think the autorefractor definitely gets thrown off by these diffractive rings. Probably the only other thing would be, you know, still talking about dry eye. You know, we try to treat it before the procedure. You know, in any cataract surgery, there's usually some dry eye afterwards. So that's probably the biggest concern or complaint sometimes is just that dry, scratchy feeling for a little while.
Right. You know, the other thing, and this is probably a conversation that you have with our multifocal patients too, but there's that neuroadaptation, right? That is going to happen and it's not going to happen 1 week post-op. And when you're looking at the studies, it says it could be a month, maybe 2 months before you're really getting the end-all vision that you're expected to have. So the 1 week visit, most, like you said, the overwhelming majority of my patients are like extremely happy. I'm like, do you need some readers? Like, nah, I see everything. Sometimes, you know, people are like a little concerned. It's a soft 20/25 and they thought it was going to be better than this. So some of this is like, you're doing great. This is just the beginning. And we're going to be walking you through this entire process and your brain. This is the first time it's seen through this sort of vision. This is totally unnatural. This is not the way the brain was made to work. We just created an artificial range of vision in your eye so that you didn't have to use reading glasses for everything. But this is not something that any human was ever born with, and your brain's going to have to learn how to do it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a great way to have the discussion. And sometimes I'll put up the chart and show them what they were seeing before cataract surgery, and then they're happy again. They're like, oh, I was really? Okay, then this is pretty good, you know, because they, you know, expect, I don't know what they're expecting, but just something we're never going to achieve. So yeah, I show them, you know, 2040, and then they're happy.
You know, it is amazing where a lot of people, and they've been seeing so good for that week after the surgery, they forget how bad it was before. Yeah. And that little reminder of what the vision used to be like is impressive.
Yeah, that usually helps that discussion. But no, for the most part, the extended depth of focus, or like I said, the panoptics, especially once they've had that second eye done, I feel like on the panoptics, it really takes them both. So I think the 1 or 2 week follow-up, they were maybe a little concerned, but they trusted the process. Once they had the second one done, then they came in smiling and very excited.
That's another really good point. This is something that you need 2 eyes to do, you know, like, and until both the eyes are there and healed, we don't expect to have a full slate of results yet.
Yeah.
I've got a few more questions coming in. So Marvin asks, how often do your patients typically have to go in for GAG? What's been your experience, Dr. Tice?
Yeah, so my experience, I would say with the younger patients, and even my surgeon told me this too, you know, definitely the late 40s, 50s, maybe early 60s, they seem to need a YEG much sooner. Mm-hmm. I mean, even several months. I mean, we usually wait at least about 6 months before we would do one. But I would say definitely pretty high rate that needs a YEG pretty soon. The older patients, the 60, 70 year olds, I would say that the typical span, which could be a couple of years even. I don't know. What's your experience, Jen?
I don't remember the exact number, but I think it's roughly 30% of everyone who has cataract surgery does end up developing posterior capsular
opacity.
You know, opacity, PCO, yes, and needing that YAG. And I do definitely agree that 30% is probably higher in my younger patients and much lower in my older patients. Yeah. But the other thing is, okay, you have a premium IOL with fantastic vision. As soon as there's even a little bit to blast off, like, we're getting that removed. Yeah. In patients that wouldn't be as bothered by this, you might leave a little PCO and it's no big deal. But on these patients, a lot of times before I even see them for their 1 week post-op, my patients are already telling me, oh, the doctor said that, you know, he's probably in about 6 months going to do a little bit of a laser to clean stuff off. I mean, at the 1 day post-op, my surgeon's telling them that they're going to be back to do a YAG in 6 months, and I'm all for it.
Yeah.
So they're going to get their best vision that way.
Yeah. Similar experience. You know, they paid a lot of money for the lenses, and they do, they want that pristine vision. So why not do it when it's time? But yeah, I would say definitely. Yeah. 4 or 6 months, it's usually ready for it.
So you mentioned a little bit earlier about dry eye being really vital to how you're managing these patients. So how are you tackling dry eye in your practice when it comes to managing your cataract patients?
You know, yeah, if we're gonna do one of these premium IOLs, it is important to not have dryness on the surface. So, you know, definitely pressing on the glands, checking for MGD. I do have a keratograph in the practice, so that helps a lot to look at their tear film, see what their breakup time is, see what their glands look like. And then we treat pretty aggressively, you know, I have an iLux. So if we have MGD that needs to be taken care of, patients are willing to have an iLux to get the best results. We'll treat with, you know, some corticosteroids if we need to. I've been using the new Ivesis or Lodamax SM.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then, you know, maybe some Sequa Restasis, but I usually go in more towards the corticosteroids, the iLux. Make sure they don't have any blepharitis. Make sure the lids are clean. Patients are pretty motivated to do those things to have the best outcome. And the surgeons really appreciate having a clean surface when I send them to them, because if those measurements are not done exact, it's really going to throw off the whole process.
And you are going above and beyond with the technology that you're offering for your patients, but I cannot agree with you more. When you've got a highly motivated patient that is
treating this cataract surgery like the refractive surgery to make them independent from glasses, right? Like, and you say to them, hey, we got to clean up some stuff on the surface of the eye if you want the surgeon to think this is a good idea. This is the most motivated dry eye patient you will ever have because they want to get that surgery done. And so it's amazing how gung-ho they are about that dry eye treatment, but it's the only way. I mean, if you send your surgeon a patient who wants a multifocal IOL and they've got blepharitis, jumped up glands, a tear breakup time of 3 seconds, covered in SPK, they are definitely not having surgery anytime in the near future. And you just wasted everybody's time.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to send a report back to you saying, okay, we're not doing anything until we do these things. And then, you know, the surgeon's going to have to take care of that, or his optometrist is going to take care of that. So that's something that's our job. You know, we should be sending that patient in ready to go.
We've got another question about how we're handling postdoc fees related to this. How are you, if you have a premium IOL that you're managing, are you doing anything different on postdoc codes or billing?
I believe in my practice, the surgeon pays us a little extra. They just pay us extra for the co-management because it does take more time for sure. But no, from the insurance company, I do not believe we get anything extra for a premium IOL. So any other fees and things we would get would be more from treating the dry eye, doing an Ilox or some other kind of, zest treatment or something for the blepharitis.
So I completely agree. I mean, just using the same post-operative code with for these IOLs versus a standard monofocal IOL. As far as I know, there's no CPT code for managing a premium product. I'm sure that you could, just like we would a chart, like some doctors out there may be creating a service above and beyond their standard cataract kit where they create their own code in office, like you would do with a Ortho K or a myopia control, something that insurance doesn't cover, and say like, hey, we'll co-manage this, but it's a X dollar amount fee that is not billable to insurance. And that would be absolutely totally fine to do. What I've found is, you know, at this point, I haven't found that it's adding anything to my postoperative time and care besides just enthusiasm and excitement and really happy patients. I haven't found it more difficult to co-manage than my standard monofocal patients. And actually, probably my patients who have had multifocal IOLs are happier and take less, you know, of my time talking about disappointment and what kind of glasses they're gonna have to have than the patients who got the standard lenses. So if anything, they're easier for me to co-manage. And now that I think about it.
Yeah, I would agree. They're, like I said, they're usually very happy and they refer other patients. So yeah, it really is a good practice builder because these people do talk about it. It's really amazing what they're sitting around at having, I don't know, COVID lunch or something, but they do talk about it. So I've gained a lot of patients actually from using premium products.
Yeah. You're right. It is that experience that's so different. They're going to be telling all their friends when they go first. And some of those patients aren't going to need cataract surgery yet. And they're going to come in and they're going to be loyal patients to you for life too. So I think it's a win for everybody to be able to at least present this as an option to them. And then, you know, the patient's going to decide if it's right for their pocket. I know there's a lot of concern from talking with other doctors. So it's like, okay, well, cataract surgery, especially if a patient has Medicare, that's covered. But these type of lenses are not. And we're talking about a several thousand dollar cost to that. But I also, you know, this is the same kind of patients in my mind where it's like, okay, yeah, I'm in LASIK, $3,500. And this is a permanent vision correction that gives you a range of focus. This is above and beyond what's accomplishable with LASIK and is going to last the rest of your life. You know, so yes, this is at a different price range, but it's also, you know, what you would pay for refractive surgery that wouldn't last as long.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's not for everybody because there's definitely a cost to it. But patients also kind of tell me, well, glasses cost a lot of money. And if I need progressives all the time, you know, I'm spending hundreds of dollars every year on those. So they kind of justify it for themselves if it's something that they really want. Yeah, that hasn't been a big issue, I don't believe. And a lot of that conversation is actually done at the cataract surgeon's office too. You know, I present the fees a little bit, but the rest of that would be at the surgeon's office.
Eric was following up. He was like, yeah, the ophthalmologist, that's where they're paying me. They're paying the ophthalmologist for sure, for this product, for the ophthalmologist's time and energy, because I'm sure it is harder, you know, making sure, because they're not doing a standard surgery and putting a premium multifocal IOL. Like, everything's going to be laser-assisted surgery. Like, you're getting the full 9 yards treatment on getting the absolute perfect capsular access. It's got to be perfectly centered. Like, it's 100% upgraded with this surgery. So they are paying a premium when they see the surgeon.
Yeah. And usually if they would need a touch up LASIK or something afterwards, mm-hmm. if there would be, you know, an error in the measurement, that's always covered too. So
it's totally, I've seen that as well, where it's like, okay, if we miss a little bit, surgeon's going to fix it for free, which is great, you know?
Yeah.
Another great question that we've got shown up, does pupil size play a factor? It probably does, but the surgeon must be making that decision. I haven't had anyone, but it's also rare for someone at that age to have large pupils. So
yeah, I would agree. I've never had a patient yet come back saying they couldn't have it because of a pupil size. I don't think that's a factor.
If anyone's listening to this and is thinking, you know, I'm hesitant because I've had a bad experience in the past with some of the older generation lenses, and I just don't want to be in that position again. Like, what would you say to them that's different if maybe they had tried 8 years ago multifocal IOL?
Yeah, when I first came out in practice, that's when like the Restore and there was a couple models of that came out, even the Crystal lens. The results were not the best, I will be honest. I worked actually for a cataract surgeon at the time, and yeah, I was hesitant, you know, but these new ones are so much better. So, so much better. The Symphony especially, that has been fabulous. So I'm hoping the new Vidity will be just as great. I think it'll actually be better because it doesn't have those diffractive rings for some of the nighttime issues. And then the PanOptics has been wonderful. So I would not hesitate. I really would not. They've been wonderful.
I just couldn't agree more, where, you know, I had patients early in my career that were motivated to be glasses free, and they got a Restore lens, and, you know, I'm checking their ad and they need the full plus 250. And I was like, oh, well, not really anything. I felt, you know, you feel bad about it. Not that it was you didn't do the surgery, but like, they thought they were going to get a certain result, and they come back and they have glare at night, and then they also need plus 250 readers, just like all the other cataract patients did. And so, yeah, that was discouraging for doctors to even want to bring it up. But I bring it up with no hesitations now. And I've been seeing patients who've had this done for 3 or 4 years, and I'm sure the surgeon I'm working with is just getting better and better. Because the first couple, like I said, at my post-op period, I had a few like complaints and uncertainties. Usually now at week one, they're like spitting out 2020 everywhere, and are like, I don't think I really need to come back again. Like, you do, but I know you're doing great. anything else that you'd like to cover or shout out? Because you're doing so much dry eye stuff. Is there certain stuff that you found that patients in this age bracket really seem to need on the dry eye front compared to a younger dry eye patient?
I mean, just definitely look at the surface, you know, take the time, put the staining on their eye, see what's there, definitely treat it. There's nothing, like I said, worse than getting that report back from the surgeon that says, oh, they've got grade 3 SPK that we got to clear up, and putting them on nutraceuticals, and you're like, oh, I should have done all of that. So definitely take the time to address the dry eye, and don't be hesitant to talk about these lenses. You know, don't shy away from the cost, let that up to the patient if they think that this is something that they really want to do. You know, embrace it. It's great technology, and it's only getting better. And kind of at the beginning of the conversation, you know, look for those relationships with your surgeon. It's just going to make your practice better. It's going to make you a better practitioner, and they're going to send you other patients for dry eye or for contact lenses or for other things when you've built that relationship with them.
I think you're so right, because one of the other things that I think maybe as optometrists, we think, well, like, oh, if they're really happy with their outcome, they're going to, it's going to be all because of the surgeon, right? None of, they're not going to like associate with the OD, but they see you so much more frequently. You were the one to first mention it. You were the one who recommended that surgeon to do that lens. Yeah. In my experience, yeah, they're happy with the surgeon, but they credit me for their excellent vision outcome, which really at the end of the day, like I didn't do any of the surgery, right? So I put all the credit back on the surgeon, but it's amazing how much they associate it with you and your practice, the results that they've had.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, they're in our chair for much longer than they are with the surgeon. So yeah, they definitely do.
Dr. Dice, I really appreciate you coming in and sharing all of your insights on this, since you've had some experience with some of the other lenses in this category. I had found you on social media, actually. I've been a big fan of yours and all that you're sharing about your practice and dry eye especially. So could you share your social media handles so other doctors can learn from you?
Yes. Yeah, so Instagram, Dr. Kimberly Tice. That is where you'll find me. And yeah, dry eye is kind of a big part of my practice. So that's usually what I'm sharing on there.
All right. Thank you guys for joining in and great questions as always. We'll be back with a new show and next week, I'm sure.
All right, colleagues, and it's a wrap. Thank you dearly for hanging out with the Defocus Media team. We hope truly something resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to give us 5 stars and make sure you follow us on all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, you named it. And our handle is at Defocus Media on all platforms. And until next time, be sure to keep it 2020, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.